Welcome to Shanahan on Literacy, the site where we believe there is nothing more noble than to teach somebody to read. I'm Tim Shanahan, your host, and today we're going to respond to a teacher who asked a question about how to plan reading comprehension lessons. That's why we have this name, How Should We Plan Reading Comprehension Lessons? That's the title of today's podcast. Here's what this person wrote. As my teachers continue learning together about text-centered planning, I would love your help with a quick reflection. When you sit down to plan a unit, one, how do you decide which comprehension standards the anchor text naturally requires? Two, what steps do you take to analyze the text before identifying standards? And three, how does the text guide the sequence of lessons and questions? Well, I'm going to try to answer all three of those questions, but before I do, let me fend off some of the defensive comments my response is certain to elicit. First, yes, I do understand that teachers are busy and they can't design every lesson themselves in depth. No, I am not out of touch with reality. I'm aware there are only so many hours in a day and that teachers have lives, not just jobs. Got it. However, if you're going to design comprehension lessons or even just adjust textbook lessons to your students' needs, which is what I would recommend, you need to understand how to build such lessons from scratch. Try what I'm talking about here with a few selections and then home in on portions of it with future lessons. With practice, I promise it gets easier. The best way to ease the pain and vouchsafe quality, try doing this with a colleague or two. You can even use those textbook lessons comparing their versions to yours. You'll end up with a deeper understanding of the support such lessons provide, as well as their weak spots, where you need to focus your efforts to ensure maximum learning for your students. And second, this is my second defensive comment, no, there is not research showing the best way to design comprehension lessons. I've reviewed the research on lesson planning, and it's mainly descriptive, summing up what teachers already do rather than evaluating the outcomes of the various approaches that they use. Relevant research is cited throughout this presentation, but none has undergone the kind of causal experimental analysis that I prefer. The lack of such study matters. Often, professors discourage teachers and prospective teachers from relying on textbook lessons, disdainfully treating the use of those lessons as a lack of creativity, dedication, caring, or even intelligence. Now, everyone has a right to an opinion, but without any evidence that teacher-made lessons are better than those textbook lessons that they discourage, that seems dopey to me. That's an insight I gained not as a textbook author, but as the director of reading for the Chicago Public Schools. Yeah, I used to say some of the silly things that other professors say. The guidance offered here is not meant to supplant those textbook lessons, but to strengthen how well teachers use them. Personal experience tells me that mindless fidelity does as much harm as good. Research shows that often when teachers stray from those kinds of lessons, there's a tendency to lower the textbook demands, which does not serve students well. What I'm saying is the studies often show that teachers try to make the textbook lessons easier. They're sure their kids can't get it. My hope is that the guidance here will help teachers to strengthen rather than weaken those textbook plans. So, here we go. My first bit of advice is do not start with the standards. Start with the text that you will teach students to comprehend. I understand that to many teachers and principals, what I just said sounds crazy. Studies show that teachers often think little about goals when planning lessons. They focus on the activities rather than the learning. Nevertheless, I start with the text and think teachers should start with the text because the text determines what can be taught. Most of the time, I want to teach with a text the students cannot already read reasonably well. My instruction will be aimed at enabling the students to comprehend this text successfully without my making it easier by reading it to them or telling them what it says. So the kids have to do the reading. The kids have to figure out the text. My guidance and instruction is going to help them to do that effectively. I'll guide students not only to solve the problem of this particular text, but I'm going to guide them to consider the possibility of using whatever skills, insights, or methods they pick up here with those future texts. We don't want learning to be ignored. As I say, a lot of times teachers are busy people that, you know, they have to worry about what they're going to do with the kids. What's the activity going to be? And they kind of, it's easy to lose sight of what's this going to lead to. We don't want teachers to ignore the learning. And that emphasis on enabling success, I think, should solve that problem. We also do not want the standards to dominate, since their relevance depends entirely on the specific demands of a text and how that text matches with what the students can already accomplish without their teacher's guidance. When the text is an afterthought, like the distant cousin you almost forgot to invite to your wedding, learning will usually be inhibited. So now we have a text, and we're going to start with that. Here's my second big piece of advice. Read the text. With a story, try to determine its plot or story grammar elements, you know, key features of the characters and one or more themes for the story. If it's an informational text, what's the point? Is it to explain the dangers of forest fires and how to prevent them? Then think about the key ideas and the structure of the article. Perhaps it specifies each danger, the cause of each, and then proposes solutions that may disrupt those cause and effect chains. Persuasive or argumentative text aims to make a point. It argues for or against something. Identifying the issue and the author's take is essential. This argument will usually be supported by a series of claims, each with some kind of evidentiary support. Knowing this information, the plot of the story or the key information from the informational text or the point of view of the perspective of the argumentative text, that allows you to design or select worthwhile questions that focus students' attention on those major ideas. Asking about these will reveal whether your students are comprehending or not. Then, in your planning, be attentive to the text's affordances. So the first, we're going to get what the text says, but now we have to pay attention to the affordances. An affordance is any information or text feature that may facilitate comprehension. Perhaps that forest fire article includes a table that summarizes or repeats some of the text information, arranging each danger along with its cause and solution. A piece of fiction may describe characters and their actions using vocabulary like uncomfortably, hesitated, desperately, and humiliated. These words collectively should help readers to understand a character and perhaps why that character responds to a situation in the way that he or she does. Students must not only obtain the key information from a text, but they should be aware of how they know what they know about the text. Encouraging the use of text evidence is a good idea, and it fits nicely with recognizing a text's affordances. Students may recognize that a character is timid, but they should also know that this was an inference that they drew based on those vocabulary words noted above, uncomfortably, hesitated, desperately, and humiliated. Finally, third thing we're going to look for in the text is be sensitive to potential barriers to comprehension. What is it that your students aren't going to get? Author's affordances, those things the author puts in there to facilitate comprehension, sometimes miscarry. Instead of bolstering understanding, they may serve to impede readers' comprehension. A simple example of this is an apt vocabulary choice that derails readers who don't know the word's meaning. A description of a historical figure that includes the word compassionate may miscarry with audiences ignorant of that word. Keep your eye out for words your students may be unfamiliar with that could block their understanding. And since this is a comprehension lesson, don't worry for the moment about unknown words unlikely to get in the way of understanding the instructional text. A lot of times authors use a rich vocabulary, but if you don't know the meaning of some of those words, it really doesn't disrupt your comprehension. We're not going to worry about those at this point. Syntax can be another barrier. Some texts try to increase readability by breaking complex ideas into a series of simple sentences. Other texts may employ longer sentences to explain complex ideas or relations among those ideas. A famous example of this is something that I'm drawing out of the research. Here's the first text. The king raised taxes. The people revolted. And here's the second text. Because the king raised taxes, the people revolted. Now, the first text may be easier to read, and readers may gain the two key facts, what the king and the people each did. As simple as those two sentences are, the overall meaning may be obscured by their separation. To actually get the point, readers have to infer a causal connection between the actions that the king and the people got involved in. They have to make this inference, which depends on prior knowledge. You have to have some sense of how people might feel about higher taxes. The second text, the key facts are stated along with an explicit connection between them. You don't have to infer it in this case. This version may trip some kids up because of the sentence length and the need to coordinate three ideas. Those put a bit more load on memory. And the sentence construction complicates this a bit by first providing the causal connection, because, and then the parts to be connected. Because the king raised taxes, the people revolted. And so, that might throw some kids. Now, don't get me wrong. One of these isn't necessarily better than the other. The issue isn't one of quality, but accessibility or effectiveness. To comprehend these, readers must either infer or recognize the reason for the people's action. Some readers may accomplish that with either version, while others may miss the point with one or another. A final example of a barrier is an author's use of metaphor. Here's a doozy, or three doozies, from William Faulkner, one of my favorite authors. In describing mosquitoes, Faulkner wrote, "Across the southern sky went a procession of small clouds like silver dolphins on a rigid ultramarine wave, like an ancient geographical woodcut." Now, thank goodness for that first metaphor. I know what small clouds look like and can easily connect a swarm of mosquitoes with that. Although I've seen wild dolphins, I'm ignorant of rigid ultramarine waves. I not only was not benefited by my prior knowledge of dolphins, but had to intentionally suppress that knowledge. I doubt Faulkner meant that the mosquitoes were flying in single file. The allusion to an ancient geographical woodcut left me bereft, too. I asked AI for help with that one. It provided examples of such woodcuts. Perhaps Faulkner meant for me to think they looked a bit like black and gray smudges on dirty white paper. If metaphors are supposed to connect an author's ideas with a reader's experiences, the first one worked for me, the second disrupted my comprehension, and for the third, I needed to already know what swarms of mosquitoes look like to connect them to the woodcuts, the opposite of how such metaphors should work. Each of these examples shows a potential barrier a text may pose to comprehension. Teaching students to recognize these problems and how to surmount them should be a big part of comprehension teaching. Teachers and textbook publishers should read instructional texts with a gimlet eye to identify words, morphemes, figurative language, metaphors, embedded clauses, elaborated phrases, passive sentences, subtle or confusing cohesive links, organizational schemes, genre features, graphic features, literary elements, or potential mismatches between a text and kids' prior knowledge. If you think some of those things may interfere with your students' understanding of a text, then anticipate the problem by designing questions that will reveal if they were tripped up. Questions like, why did the people revolt? How would you describe Sally? Or how would you describe what the mosquitoes looked like on page 87? Those kinds of questions should accomplish this nicely. If the students can answer the questions, then that information or text feature wasn't really a problem for them. There's nothing more to do. But if they can't, then teaching will be needed to show them how to deal with issues such as the importance of recognizing causal connections, the use of adjectives and adverbs to identify character traits, or how to recognize and use metaphors. Such on-the-fly adaptations are essential when it comes to comprehension instruction. Think about what you should do if your questions reveal incomprehension or miscomprehension. If it were the first time we dealt with an issue, I'd likely point out the problem, take the kids back to that portion of the text, reread it to them, and I'd use a think aloud to demonstrate how I'd deal with this portion of text. On the other hand, if that kind of thing had already been done, then I might try to guide the students to solve the problem themselves. What did we say it meant when a sentence begins with because? Can you find the two ideas the author was trying to connect? And still later, what do we do when a sentence begins with because? I would fade the scaffold over time. Research shows that such scaffolding leads to learning. This kind of teaching requires a gradual release of responsibility approach, starting with direct telling and modeling, followed by guided practice, and then a reduction of support. You can't always plan for all of that. You have to be ready to respond in appropriate ways. When it comes to reading comprehension instruction, the text needs to be king or queen. It should determine the questions to be asked and the stopping points where guidance and teaching can take place. The standards have a more general purpose to guide the choice of texts in terms of challenge levels and genres, and to stress the importance of gaining an understanding of both what a text says and how it works. You might have noticed that many of those potential barriers listed above were about language. That's not an accident. Although state education standards usually require the teaching of English language skills, these treatments tend to separate language from writing and comprehension. That's unfortunate and may explain the lack of payoff from such teaching. Things like formal grammar instruction really don't do much for comprehension. Studies reveal that except for vocabulary, teachers rarely focus on linguistic affordances or barriers in their comprehension lessons. I don't know what standards you're working with, so I'll focus on the Common Core standards, a reasonable choice because many states still use them or have at the very least retained their basic structure. These reading standards are divided in four parts. 1, key ideas and details. 2, craft and structure. 3, integration of knowledge and ideas. And 4, the range of text and text complexity. The standards included in that first category match well with my content category from before. Likewise, the affordances ideas, especially relevant to the standards craft and structure. Both of those emphasize encouraging students to consider an author's choices and how we might use them or respond to them. Now, I'm ignoring that third category, that integration of knowledge and ideas in this case, since it's more about connecting multiple texts and using the text information, not reading comprehension per se. Now, I've already dealt with the fourth category, choosing the right text. Text worth knowing, text demanding enough that students will benefit from working with it, text that represents a genre we want kids to know. The text determines the information and text features that students will confront. But there's more to it than that. With directed or guided reading, you need to choose where to stop so discussions can take place and guidance can be offered. Some authorities recommend students read a whole selection, then rereading it together in parts. Others seem to think that all guided reading text should be divvied into digestible chunks. My advice is to decide this based on how hard the text will be for your kids. If it will be relatively easy, it might be read through with minimum support. If it's very challenging, you might want to give it a close reading treatment, reading it multiple times to address key ideas, craft and structure, and potential barriers separately. These rereads could be of the complete text, or students may be guided to revisit a sentence here, a paragraph there, and any of these excerpts may be read and reread multiple times. We want both to enable students to understand this text and to learn how to solve future texts. We reread when and in ways that will help us to accomplish those goals. Design questions that get at each text's content, craft, and structure, and barriers, not based on the standards. Then compare your questions with the standards. Perhaps you'll see something that you think you missed. It's reasonable to add questions based on the standards if they really fit the text. Now remember, our purpose isn't to give kids practice answering certain kinds of questions. We're trying to get them to comprehend the text. If a question helps kids to notice something important that a text says or how it says it, then it's a good question. Also of value are those questions that uncover misunderstandings. They can identify skills and abilities that would benefit from teaching. Teaching students how to overcome barriers and make sense of a challenging text, a text that may not be easily connected to their prior knowledge, a text that might outstrip their current decoding and/or language skills, should be the major point of those guided or directed reading sessions. And that'll be my final word today on how to plan comprehension lessons. If you are interested in having a written copy of this, go to the Shanahan on Literacy website. The blog entry for February 28th, 2026, How Should We Plan Reading Comprehension Lessons, will offer you that. A benefit of the written version is it has the research citations that I referred to in this, and there are 9 of them for this particular article. Most of those are doctoral dissertations that focused on how teachers plan their lessons. I found those interesting and useful. Perhaps you will. With that, I want to thank Greg Johnson for his expert sound engineering, and I'd like to thank you for tuning in. I hope to see you up the road a piece.